that I have been involved in this world of data, the most impressive thing I've seen, WeChat Pay, the mobile payment revolution.
我自己在数据领域做了30年的工作，让我觉得最吃惊的来自中国的这个创造，就是支付宝和微信的支付，手机支付。So
you might be wondering, what is next?
所以你可能会想了，继手机支付之后，下一个创新是什么呢？
So all I know about is, of course, data and how technology drives innovation in the data space.
我自己了解的就是 数据以及在数据领域，技术到底是如何驱动创新的？
And I think it's a combination between encryption and blockchain, which creates a certain amount of data symmetry between individuals and organizations.
我认为呢，可能这个未来就在于 加密和区块链的结合，从而使得个人和机构之间形成了某种数据的对称性。For
example, let's turn about data refinery, namely, let's start fresh. For example, let's take the data we create, which an insurance company bases its decision on whether to give us an insurance and at what terms.
比如说，我们会产生一些数据，保险公司呢就把这些数据利用起来，然后基于这些数据来决定到底是不是让我们投保，以及给我们的这个投保条件是什么。And
then since we're here in the Qiantu Lounge, let's talk about car insurance.
既然我们也在前途驿，这里又有车，我们就讲一讲车险。What
should car insurance be based on?
车险。 保险公司给你车险的依据是什么呢?
What data would you use if you were an insurance company, Ping An, to make a decision what premium does a person have to pay? So if there's an accident, me, Ping An, is going to reimburse them. How much money do you want to get from that person? What should it depend on?
就想象一下，如果说你自己是保险公司，你要采集怎样的数据来判断 这个人如果要上车险的话，他应该交多少保费？因为作为保险公司，一旦发生了事故的话，他是需要赔付的。所以说，他就必须要在决定这个人交多少保费的时候做出审慎的决策。Should
it depend on the gender of the person? I think females versus males.
是否是应当基于某人的性别呢？男性还是女性？
What do you think? Who should pay more? Male?
大家怎么看？ 男性和女性谁应该付更多的保费？
OK， 为什么？
为什么？
OK， they're more passionate. So let's assume that was the case. What do we think is fair? Should men pay higher insurance?
刚刚呢，这位女士说，男性应该要付更多的保费，因为男性可能在驾驶的时候要更加的激情一点。那假设说就是这样子，这样公平吗？
Or what about the age? Should a young person who is on top of his game, really fit, should he get a really cheap insurance? But maybe he is even more reckless and he has less experience. Or should the old opa, who barely managed to get into the car, get the cheap insurance, because he certainly isn't going to speed anyway.
还是说我们应该也要考虑到年龄因素，比如说一个年轻人，这个年轻人他身体状态非常的好，是不是应该让他少付一点保费呢？但是另外一方面，这个年轻人可能驾驶的时候他不注意，会比较的急躁，还是说应该让一个老年人都没有办法很难去打开车门，很难上车的这样一个老年人付少一点保费，因为他肯定是绝对不会超速的。
And should it not depend on whether the person is driving and how much they are driving and maybe even how they are driving?
还是说也应当考虑这个人他驾驶的习惯，他驾驶的频率有多高，以及他驾驶的习惯是怎样的呢？
My car is safely at home in my garage in San Francisco. No way I have an accident because I am thousands and thousands of miles away from it. So why should I pay insurance for my car?
比如说我自己，我现在的车在旧金山，我自己车库里，我呢离它有数千里，绝对是不会开车的。那为什么我还要为它上车这个保险呢？
So a former student of mine from Stanford actually started a car insurance company, which is a pay as you drive insurance company called MetroMile.
其实我之前在斯坦福的有一个学生，他就基于此开了一家自己的车险公司，就叫做他的模式就是你要开车才要付保险，付保费。
So what you have to do is you have to insert their little device Shenzhen made into the OBD2 port in the car, into the interface where you can read out data, and it communicates with the internet. It communicates.Where you are driving, when you are driving, and even how you are driving.
他们做的呢，就是他们要求你把一个设备插到你的车里，然后呢，这个设备就会将你驾驶，比如说你在哪里驾驶，何时驾驶，以及你驾驶到底这个开了多久，这些数据也传回这个公司。
So I just use this example of insurance to show you how fundamentally.The society we live in is changing based on the data that we create, and we have no choice of creating those data.
我刚刚给大家举这个车险的例子呢，主要就是为了向大家说明我们所创造的数据到底在多大程度上改变了我们所身处的社会，而且呢，对于此我们是无能为力的。
So, let's say.You think that it's nobody's business how you're driving. And you say, I don't want insurance. I'm a rich guy. I pay for it myself. If I trash a car, if I trash somebody else's car, I write the check and I'm done.
有可能你说没关系，我怎么开车跟别人没有关系，因为我有钱，那我不上保险，一旦出了事故的话，我就直接赔。
And of course, you don't use Baidu Maps because Baidu would know.From you asking for the directions, Baidu would know where you are. So there you throw your phone away.
而且啊，你也绝对不能用百度地图，因为一旦你用百度地图去搜到底要去哪里，搜路线的时候，百度就知道你要去哪里了，你就直接把你的手机也扔掉，不用了。
So then, what's left? Well, the car has to have a license plate, because the purpose of the license plate is you can identify the car.
但是哪怕你把这些东西都不要了，你的车至少还要一个车牌，因为车牌呢能够让你认出是自己的车。
So, another friend of mine has a company in Suzhou that writes the software for the Public Security Bureau for their police.
我还有一个朋友，他们在苏州呢有一家公司，这个公司专门就是为公安局去写软件。
And as you are now having thrown away your phone and made sure there is no device in the car as you are merely driving along, those cameras, which we know exist en masse in China, just take pictures of license plates. Let's say they don't do anything else. All they do is so-called optical character recognition on the license plates.
现在呢，你把你的手机也扔掉了，车里也什么仪器也没有，就开心的在。路上开车的时候，其实路上有很多的摄像头，这些摄像头呢会识别你的车牌号。
There's clearly nothing wrong with taking a picture of a license plate, because any of us could be doing that.
其实这个就是任何的设备，它都能够做到去识别你的车牌号。
So that means it is not about collecting data, but it's about connecting data.Where the value comes.
所以这也就说明了，其实收集数据并不能够带来数据的价值，关键就在于将这些数据的点连接起来。
So now what do you think? Should you be able to ask your friends and saying, well, my husband, he has been coming home quite late over the last half year. And he says that he's always...busy at work and he can't leave early because there's so much work for him. But when I looked at those license plate data, it turned out he left quite early and it stops over somewhere else before it comes home.
那现在呢就有这样一个可能性了。有一天你就跟朋友说，我的丈夫过去半年间一直都很晚回家，他给出的理由是因为工作忙没有办法早回家。但是呢当你调出这个车牌号的数据之后，你会发现其实他下班很早，只是说他在回家之前呢总是经过了某一个地方。
So the US, it wouldn't be PSB, the police, who has those data, but it's a private company. It's a private company taking pictures with cameras that connect data and tells you for a fee where that car has been.
在美国啊，并不是公安局拥有你那个车的这个车牌数据，而是有一些私人的公司，他们就用这些摄像头去通过你的车牌号采集数据，然后如果说你想要知道这些车的数据的话，你就要向他们付费。
So I could give you many more examples, and I just was sticking here to the car, but we can take examples from every part of life. For example, from work, from the workplace.
我刚刚给大家一直举的例子呢，都是和车有关，但实际上人的生活的方方面面都有类似的数据，比如说在你的工作场合。
So I've heard about a company in San Francisco that asks all employees.To wear a Fitbit, to wear one of these devices which records your vital statistics.
我就听说在旧金山有一家公司，他让自己所有的员工都戴上一个智能的腕表，这样呢就可以通过这个腕表来监测你的一些生命的体征。
And then I heard that one morning, an employee was coming to your office for a very important meeting, and his boss said, "I'm sorry."Seem not to have got a good night's sleep. So I think, you know, you better get home now. We don't want you in this meeting. We want you to have a good sleep. Bye-bye.
然后我就听说有一天有一个员工他进公司，因为有一场很重要的会他要开，突然他老板就跟他说，哎，好像我看你昨天晚上没睡好，还是最好不要参加这个会议了，回家好好休息一下。
That is kind of tricky. Because, of course, nobody has to work at that company.So do we think that the workplace, a device that collects your data 24/7, is something we could, should be required to by our employer?
所以你就想在一个工作场合里面，在你的公司，是否你的老板能可以或者是有这样的一个权利，他应该让你去带上这样一个设备，从而能够24小时全天候对你的情况有所了解呢？
Well, let's use another example.In your company, you have to go to meetings, and you sit at different people at the meetings. And you all know that you like some people better than other people.
我们再说，还是一家公司，还是会议这个场景，因为一场会呢，有很多人参加，总是有些人你喜欢，有些人你不是那么的喜欢。
Now, what shall we do about that? Because those meters or those cameras in the offices,which are completely, of course, okay to have cameras in the public spaces, they figure out who interacts well with whom. Should they then say, you over there, you tend not to be a positive influence on the other workers. I think we'll send you, thank you so much for having worked with us.
那就想象一下，比如说你在这样一个会议室里，会议室里有摄像头，摄像头呢就通过观察每个人之间的互动，跟别人说，哎，我发现你好像对同事没有带来正能量，还是请你出去吧。
So as you see, I can point very negative scenarios. I could also put positive scenarios that just when you need a bit of information, that information is presented to you because it knows that at this moment you're ready to actually absorb, to get good information, to have a teachable moment where you'll actually learn something.
我刚刚给大家举的例子呢，可能都是一些负面的例子，但实际上也有正面的例子。比如说有这么多的数据，那一旦你想要获得什么样的信息，你马上就能够获得。
So, let's talk about the car again. Turns out that in the United States, there's a shortage of truckers, of people who drive these big trucks across the country.
还是再说回到车这边。在美国据说现在呢卡车司机的这个供应量是不足的。
They make a crazy amount of money, but still, people don't want to do it.
其实卡车司机挣很多的钱，但是呢，还是大家不愿意去开卡车。
It used to be amazing feeling there you are on the highways, driving, driving, driving. The German word for that is Fahrvergnügen, but no more.
过去呢，其实卡车司机他的生活是很愉快的，就在高速公路上一直开，一直开。
Because the drivers feel surveyed all the time, like every time they drive, data goes to the central office, and they even have a camera inside the car that is watching the driver. So when he gets sleepy and is about to doze off, a loud alarm wakes him up. And in some cases, when that happens, the truck just drives to the side of the street and parks and lets the guy get his rest.
但是现在呢，情况不是这样了，因为现在每次司机在开车的时候，他们的数据呢都会被传回到一个中控室，甚至呢在车里面都还有摄像头就不断的监测这个司机的状态，一旦发现这个司机昏昏欲睡，可能没有办法很好的开车了，就突然就会响起警示灯。叮的声音告诉他你应该要休息了，然后这个司机呢就会把车开到路边休息一会儿。
So those were just some examples of how data changed the way people work. We all have many, many, many more examples of the future of work, the future of workers, the future of working, what actually means to work.
刚刚这一切的例子呢，都是数据到底是怎么改变了生活。其实类似的例子还有很多，有关于这个工作的未来，有关于工作方式的未来，有关于工人的未来，以及有关于未来工作到底是怎样的一个情况。
So data influences the way we live, the way we love, the way we find love, dating apps.
所以啊，数据改变了我们的生活方式，改变了我们可能和爱人相处的方式，也改变了我们寻找爱的方式。比如说，现在有了约会的 APP。
Influences where we eat, 点评 what we eat, how we eat。
它也改变了我们到底去哪里吃饭，我们到底吃什么，我们吃饭的方式。因为现在呢，你可以去大众点评去搜一些餐厅了。
So it influences the way.How we spend our money, and also who we want to lend our money.
它也改变了我们消费的方式，以及改变了我们到底想把钱借给谁。
Let's say you're a bank, and I come to you and I say, I want to borrow some money. What would you base your decision on whether to give me money or not?
想象一下，如果说你是一家银行，有人呢就跟你说，我想要借钱。那么你会基于什么来决定是否给这个人借出这笔钱呢？
There's a company in San Francisco called Upstart, and they make decisions on who to give money to based on their college scores. So if you did poorly in that poetry class in your first year in college, that might be a bad sign for getting a loan.Or it might be good sign for getting a loan.
在旧金山有这样一家公司，他们呢就基于你在大学的时候的一个成绩来决定是否给你借钱。如果说你在大一的时候，比如说诗歌课上你的成绩不好，这可能呢是有助于你借到钱，也有可能对你借到钱产生不利的影响。
So people talk about big data, but it's not the size that matters. It's what you do with it.
其实人们总在说大数据，但是关键不在于数据量到底有多大，而是在于你有了这个数据之后，你对它做什么。
And what is new is the large variety of data we have at our disposal to make decisions. Many different sources coming together, for example, for the question about who to give a loan at what terms to.
现在呢，我们有海量的数据，这些数据都可以为我们所用，帮助我们做决策。数据的来源有多种多样，比如说之前举的这个贷款的例子，你就可以利用他的大学的分数来判断。
For example, in the past, people said, well, there is a chance that the person might get rolled over by a bus. But if the person never walks on streets where the bus is, then you know, we can safely say that is not a term in our equation.
比如说过去啊，我们会说啊，这个人可能会有一天被车撞，但是呢，如果说有了数据显示这个人根本就不会出现在这个车会行驶的街道上，那你就可以知道这个判断肯定是错的。
So, China has been leading the world with the idea of computing a score for all citizens and non-citizens, foreigners like me, the social credit score, the Sesame score.
中国呢，现在为所有的生活在中国的人，包括国自己本国的国民，还有外国人，都有一个积分。这个呢，社会信用积分，也或者就是我们的芝麻信用分。这个呢，是中国在世界是领先的。
Who has a score above 800 in this room?
在座谁的芝麻信用分是超过800的 ？Left check.
Who knows their score?
那如果谁就是在座的人对于自己的芝麻信用分是有了解的，知道自己有多少分，请举一下手。
Okay, so I know that typically about half an hour into a talk, half of the audience has fallen asleep and the other half is having sexual fantasies.
一般呢，根据我个人的经验，如果说有一场演讲，演讲经过了半个小时之后，一半的听众呢会昏昏欲睡，还有一半听众脑子里面可能已经想入非非了。
So that's when you know that people actually are still awake. So my question still is, who of you has never looked at their Sesame score?
刚刚这个也是笑话，主要是让大家清醒一下。我们再继续回到这个芝麻信用分，有多少人会经常的去看自己的信用分？
So this is what it looks like. It is on Alipay, and then it's the button, and it's get, what's the Chinese word for it? For a Sesame score.
芝麻,
exactly. So that's where it is. That's what it looks like.
芝麻信用分的界面就是这样的。
So who of you has never looked at their 芝麻, at their Sesame score?
在座有没有人从来没有去查过自己的分？
Really?
真的吗？
Okay. All right. So now, it is a beautiful example of a data refinery. It takes...lots of data into account, for example, what you do in Taobao, and then computes one number for the person, which is supposed to be a good summary number of how much you can trust them.
其实这个芝麻信用分呢，就是数据处理厂、数据加工厂一个很好的例子。它会收集许许多多不同来源的数据，比如说你在淘宝上的一个购物习惯的数据，将这些数据整合起来，然后产出一个积分。这个积分呢，又可能成为某个人信用的一个标志。
So now here is the problem. You can't give money to everybody because some people will take the money and run.
因为毕竟你不能够把钱借给任何随便的人，因为有些人他可能会卷了你的钱就跑了。
So, would you then trust the score and financial computes and say, all right, if your score is above 700, we give you money at pretty good conditions. If your score is below 700, then you have a pretty high interest rate because we think that you're quite risky.
那你就想现在想想能不能就信这个信用芝麻信用分？假如说你的这个分数是高于700的。那就给你一个比较低的利息，但如果说你的分数是低于700的，那就给你一个高的利息，因为这样这个人可能风险会比较高。
So I could see that makes sense, because after all, the score is computed based on financial transactions. But now, what if your score is really low? Should you be allowed to take the high-speed train, or do you have to take the bus?If you want to go from Shanghai to Beijing.
其实用你的信用分来做，就是基于你的芝麻信用分来决定是否给你贷款呢，这个是有道理的。毕竟这个分数它是收集了很多你在金融交易方面的记录。但是假如说你的分数并不高，那么是否就意味着这个人他不能够坐高铁？他如果想要去出远门的话，就必须要坐大巴呢？
Or push even further. Let's say you have a child here in Chengdu, and there are a couple of very good primary schools for children. But your child can only go to that school if your score is above 750. Is that fair?
或者我们再进一步的想，比如说你自己有一个小孩，成都呢有一些非常不错的小学，你想要把你的小孩送到这个小学，但是呢，只有当你的芝麻信用分超过750分，你才能够把小孩送到这些好的小学，这个公平吗？
Again, it is a real problem. Not everybody can go to the best primary schools. You have to have some way of having this scarce resource of sending a child to a very good primary school. You have to allocate that scarce resource. But how you do it, that is the big question where data actually is helping.
毕竟这个优质的小学，它的资源是有限的，不是每个人都能把自己的小孩送到这些最好的小学。那如何去分配这些稀缺的资源呢？这个问题也是数据能够真正帮助到的问题。
So we live in an amazing time where we can create possibilities the generation of our parents wouldn't even have dreamt of.
我们现在所处的时代其实是一个非常好的时代，对我们而言有很多的可能性，是我们的父母一辈他们只能够想象，但是却无法获得的。
If you had told your parents 15 years ago that you don't carry any money with you, you're only carrying a device with you, and you can buy anything with that, your parents probably would have said, I think we should see a doctor.
如果说50年前你跟你的父母说，啊，我其实你上街根本就不需要带钱，你带某个设备就好了。无论你想买什么，只要刷一下这个设备就行。你的父母第一反应就是你该去看精神医生了。
But as so many friction points, as so many things which used to absorb energy have disappeared, some other things are still standing bright and need our attention, such as the question about what is fairness.
虽然说确实有很多的问题随着时代的发展已经得到解决，但是呢，还有一些问题依然在那里，是值得我们去关注的。比如说，到底什么是公平？
I want to give you one final example on data. That is, what is fairness in organ donations? If you are sick and you need somebody to donate a kidney to you,
我现在想和大家分享在数据方面最后一个例子。这个例子呢，就是有和公平有关，比如说器官捐献。如果说你病了，你需要肾。
But there are also 10 other people who have the same kind of blood, so they would accept the same kind of kidney, 10 other people and you.
但是还有10个人，他们也需要换肾。
But only one kidney arrives, only one donor.
但是现在呢，能够获得的肾源只有一个。
How would you solve that problem?
你要如何解决这个问题？
I think, again, we have to create a score, the kidney score. And we have to be public about how we put different terms in that score, and then what weights do we put in front of the scores. And we have to then very transparently compute it. And if you have the top score, then you're the one who gets the kidney.
我觉得呢，我们也可以再创造一个积分或者是一个分，叫做肾这个分。这个分呢，你必须它会有一些考虑的因素，而每个因素呢会有不同的权重。这些因素和权重你都必须要向公众公开。如果说某一个人能够获得最高的分，那这个人就能够得到这个肾。
So when we are talking about big data, when we are talking about the world we live in, my view is that we have to understand how we want to evaluate things. We have to write down an equation, a function of what matters to us.
我觉得在这样一个大数据的世界，在我们现在所处的这个世界，我们需要有一种评估事情的方式，我们需要有一个公式让我们去评估。
So, we can optimize anything. But we need to have that discussion about what it is that we want to optimize.
我们可以优化一切的事物，但是呢，在决定做出进行优化之前，我们必须要判断到底哪些是我们想要优化的。
For that, to actually have a voice in this, we need to make sure that all of us become data literate, that we know actually what data means.
为了让自己在这个决定过程中是有话语权的，你们必须要对于数据有所了解，有数据素养。
And ladies and gentlemen, I've spent the last 17 years, every year, a couple of months in China where I cannot read or write. So I have a deep experience of 15% of my last 20 years or so of being functionally illiterate.Of not being able to make sense out of things.
在过去几年里呢，每一年我都会在中国待上几个月。我自己就对于，就是你没有办法阅读，也没有办法去写这个国家的文字，也就是说，没有这种素养，这种感受是有深刻的体会的。
Even that little kid out there, he knows how to speak Chinese, how to read Chinese a little bit. I know.
哪怕是一个小孩，随便一个小孩，他们都能够去读，能够去写中文，但是我却不会。
But being functionally illiterate helps me to understand what it means actually and what the value is of being data literate, of actually being able to read data.
但是呢，通过我对于中文这种缺乏，对于中文的素养，这种体验，这种经历，让我意识到了数据素养到底是什么意思，如何去阅读，去明白数据。
So an example of being data literate means that if you're in a given situation, you can figure out whether something is possible, plausible, implausible, or just simply impossible.
有数据素养的意思就是在某种情形下你是可以判断这个东西到底是可能的、可信的、不可信的还是完全就不可能。
When somebody tells you something about data, I want people to have a feeling about whether it makes sense what they are saying, or as I as a physicist would say, whether they got the order of magnitude right.
也就是说，当有人告诉你有关于数据的事情的时候，你要有这种能力去判断他说的到底是真是假，他对于这个事物的一个重要性、量级的认识是不是对的。
Another thing physicists are good at, and many of the data scientists we know are actually educators, physicists. Physicists understand that there are always errors in measurements.
除此之外，因为我个人背景呢，就是我也学，我是物理学的博士。很多的数据科学家，他们本身也是物理学出身。因为物理学家，他们明白，无论你在测量什么的时候，都会发生误差。
And they're pretty good in basically doing two things, in counting and dividing. That's about all that physicists know.
而且呢，物理学家他们有两件事情非常的擅长。第一呢，就是去数数；第二呢，就是去分类。
But what is important is to know what to count.
但是更重要的一个问题就是，在你数之前，你要知道到底该数什么。
And it's also important for me to know the limits of what numbers or what data can do for us.
对我而言，还有一个非常重要的一点，就是我们要知道数据、数字它的 这个限制或者说它的限度在哪里。
Albert Einstein is supposed to have said, not everything that counts can be counted, and not everything that can be counted counts.
据说爱因斯坦说过这样一句话，不是一切可以被计量的东西都重要，也不是一切重要的东西都可以被计量。
But I think we can learn something from our friends Jeff Bezos and Ma Yun, who both had hired me as their data coach.
但是呢，我们可以从 Jeff Bezos 以及马云身上学到什么？这两位呢，都雇佣我作为他们的数据教练。
Becoming more data literate is not only an advantage in business, but I think it's also an advantage for society.
拥有数据素养不仅仅对于企业而言是一种优势，对于社会而言也是一种好处。
Tomorrow, we go to Beijing.
明天呢，我们就会前往北京。
And I meet the CEO of Qiantu.
我会在北京去和前途易的 CEO 见面。
On Monday, I fly to Germany, to Berlin.
周一的时候呢，我就会飞到德国的柏林。
And it's a great honor for me that the German Chancellor, the head of state, Angela Merkel, invited me to meet with her as her data coach on Wednesday next week from 10:30 in the morning until 12:00.
让我觉得非常荣幸的是，德国的总理默克尔女士她邀请我做她的数据教练，在下周三10:30 to 12:00我会给她讲授有关数据的知识。
So I personally am very touched that maybe the most powerful woman in the world is curious about digital transformation. She wants to do a good job for her people.
让我觉得非常感动，因为这个世界上可以说是世界上最有权势的女性，她想要了解数字化转型到底是什么，她希望为自己的人民去做一点实事。
I've been thinking very hard about what to talk to her about, and I've come up with three topics which I think are important.
我一直在思考，在见到默克尔总理的时候，我要跟她说什么。我想有三个话题非常的重要。
The first question is that of trust.
第一个呢，就是信任。
So when we lived in a village, trust was relatively easy because we knew how to find a person. If they are not giving us back what they borrowed from us, we know how to find them and beat them up.
如果说我们就生活在一个小村庄，信任这个东西呢，其实可能会比较容易做到，因为如果说有人欠钱不还，你知道在哪里能够找到他，而且你有办法逼他还钱。
But what is trust now? How can we, in a world where so much works through data, how can we use data to create trust?
但是在一个更大的世界里，在这样一个拥有大数据的世界，我们到底如何利用数据去创造信任呢？
Sometimes, some people who actually I don't think I have met, they send me a contact request on WeChat. Usually pretty good-looking girls.
有时候有一些人，我从来没有见过他，但是他突然会在微信上请加我的好友，而且呢，他们的头像往往是那些长得年轻漂亮的女性。
Do you think I can trust them?
大家觉得我能不能信任他们呢？
Yes. Okay, good to know.
是，该信任。好。
Another question is actually, which I want to discuss with her, is a question of identity. Who are we?
我想要和默克尔总理探讨的第二个话题呢，是有关于身份的话题。我们到底是谁？
Am I my mobile number 138-1818-3800?
是否我的手机号就能代表我呢？我只是一串数字 138-188-3800?
Am I my WeChat account? Evagant?
还是说我的微信就能代表我？我的微信名叫 Evagant。
Am I the attributes I have? 190 centimeters, blonde hair, blue eyes, from Germany, live in America?
还是说我的一些特征代表我？比如说我身高1.9米，我有蓝色的眼睛，我出生于德国，现在呢生活在美国。
Am I the piece of paper called passport?
还是说一张纸，护照，这张叫做护照的纸能够代表我？
Maybe all of that. Or am I what I don't tell other people about? Am I the secrets I have?
或许上述种种构成了我，也有可能其实我是那些我没有告诉别人的东西，一切的没有告诉别人的秘密组成了我。
To summarize, what I wanted to tell you was that we live in a world which is radically different in us leaving traces, whatever we do, us creating data, sharing data, whether we want it or not.
所以我总结来说，我今天想和大家分享的几个主要的观点就是，现在我们所身处的世界，我们在不断的创造数据，不断的分享数据，不管你想还是不想，你都没有办法改变这个事实。
We looked at how that has changed the world, how we think about information, how we think about buying things, how we think about ourselves, our friends.
而这一切呢，又改变了这个世界，改变了我们对于信息的认识。我们的购物方式，我们对自己身份的认知，以及我们和朋友相处的方式。
We realized how relatively recent those things are. WeChat, not even 8 years old. Alipay, maybe 4 years old.
而且这些改变我们生活的东西，其实都是非常新的，最近才出现。微信出现不到8年，支付宝可能不到4年。
The amount of data we create increases exponentially. That means the amount of increase is proportional to the current value.
我们所创造的数据呢，现在是呈指数级的增长，而它所这个数据量的增长呢，又和数据的价值成正比。
Such processes, these exponential processes, are characterized by the time it takes to say,be 10 times as big. For data, it is 5 years, the time scale it takes for data to have increased by a factor of 10.
而这些数据它呈指数级增长，也就是说每5年我们所创造的数据量就可以翻10倍。
Data, 10 years, factor of 10. 5 years, factor of 10. Now,Compare this to AI, to artificial intelligence. AI, the same factor of 10 in the cycles we use for artificial intelligence is only 1 year.
现在在和人工智能进行对比，我们说数据是要花5年的时间它才能够翻十倍，但是对人工智能而言，翻十倍只需要1年。
So the value of data is the impact that data has on decisions.
所以数据的价值存在于数据影响你决策的能力。
If I look into the future, I think it will not be long until we declare that computers are actually better in almost everything of making decisions than we are.
如果说让我预测未来，我相信很快我们就会说，计算机在一切需要做决策的领域都比人要做得好。
And why is that the case? For that, I want to end my talk with getting back to the car for the last time.
为什么我会这样说呢？就这一点，我想大家，我们继续再探讨以车为例来说。
When we humans learn to drive, we learnfrom our own mistakes. Hopefully, I should say, do we learn from our own mistakes?
人在学车的时候，实际上是从自己所犯的错中学习，希望大家能一旦犯错之后呢，是能够学习的。
In the best case, we learn from our mistakes.
其实 最好的情况就是人会从他自己犯的错中学习。
In contrast, let's take the self-driving car. A self-driving car doesn't only learn from its mistakes, it learns from all the other cars' mistakes. Any car that is on the network updates through the mistakes they make the model the car has what it should be doing.
但是无人车呢，就一辆车，它实际上是从所有的同样的车型所犯的错误中学习，他们不断地将自己所犯的错的数据上传。
So, I said the social data revolution has changed everything. But I feel that if we take the connection of the data combined with the processing power we have and AI, that factor of 10 every year is crazy.
刚提到的社交数据的革命呢，改变了一切。现在想一想，这个数据量再加上人工智能的处理能力，每一年会翻十倍，未来将会非常的可怕。
So I have no idea. When I arrived a couple of days ago, I wanted to go in the walking street area to that place where in 2001,I had 荒油草水。
几天之前我来成都的时候呢，其实我是想去步行街寻找一下2001年我去吃红油抄手的地方。
Sadly, that place wasn't there anymore. Instead, they had some expensive jewelry stores there.
但是让我觉得非常遗憾的是，这个红油抄手店已经不在了，取而代之的呢是非常昂贵的珠宝店。
If we wait another 17 years, in terms of processing power,That is a one with 17 zeros behind it. I think none of us has any clue what Chengdu will look like.
再想象一下，如果再过17年，如果它的这个处理能力翻一后面有17个0这么多倍的话，未来的成都可能和现在将是有截然不同。
So let's each of us try our part to make the world a little bit more data literate.To make better decisions based on data, to create possibilities based on the data we all create.
所以我想要呼吁大家，尽自己的能力，让我们整个世界都更有数据素养，基于数据做更好的决策，基于我们所创造的数据创造更多的可能性。
Good luck and thank you.
最后祝大家好运，也感谢大家。
好，谢谢教授精彩的演讲，非常简要也非常有趣的方式，让大家能够通过跟随教授的演讲，回想到我们生活的方方面面，以及更深入的一些思考。也非常感谢教授刚刚非常有趣的带我们度过了几分钟没有电的时光，也是意外的惊喜。那么没有电，我们也可以开心的度过；没有手机，没有网络，会怎样度过？那么大家在接下来的环节呢，是林伟杰林先生跟韦斯曼教授的一个对谈环节。那么在这个环节，我征询一下林总的意见，就是如果大家有什么问题或者是想要及时的提问的话，在这个环节实际上也是可以随时举手来提问，跟两位嘉宾互动，好吗？好，那现在开始我们的对谈环节。
首先我要再一次欢迎咱们那个 Wagon 教授啊，不远千里专门从美国来到中国，而且来到咱们成都啊，接受前途翼的一个邀请，而且因为这个咱们的行程啊，他还改变了去跟德国总理会面的这个时间，所以我觉得就是非常的感动，也非常感谢，再次谢谢教授。
Thank you again for being here.
那个其实前途翼哈，其实是一个复合型的一个文化空间。我们为什么要把这样世界一流的一个这样的一位教授能够请到咱们成都来？其实也是能够体现出我们整个前途翼的一个品牌定位。我们这边呢，其实是一个咖啡馆，是一个书店，同时呢是一个多功能的活动空间。 那我们希望呢能够借助这样的一个活动呢，让大家能够感受到这个时代的最前沿的这样的一些信息，然后能够让我们站在一个比较巨人的一个肩膀上去了解更多的一个世界。所以我觉得就是说这也是我们做这个前途一的初衷啊。我们先说这个这样的一个背景。那接下来呢我会分成这个两个部分哈，就是说我会从我的这个角度，我准备了一些我个人关注的问题包括我们个人的，包括我们生意上的一些可能性。那这些呢我会给大家做一个简单的一个分享，然后也期待教授给我们很多的这个指导意见。那在这个过程当中呢，我特别希望大家能够也是自己做一些思考跟准备，如果待会儿有时间也可以从各自的角度给教授进行这种近距离的一个对话，好不好？所以那个那我就先开始我的第一个问题啊。我第一个问题是这样的，就是我们知道说
Germany, of course, has a history of a Third Reich, of Hitler Germany, where millions of Jews, gay people, etc. were killed.
德国很在经历过一个第三帝国的时期，也就是希特勒当权的时期。当时呢，数百万的犹太人他们被无情的杀害了。
So I've been very worried about personal data, and Germany, some people would say, is actually.Significantly fallen behind the United States and China because of the worry that we have about the data that can be related to people's data.
所以呢，德国人对于个人的数据是非常关注而且非常担心的。有些人说，正因为此，所以德国在发展方面是远落后于中国和美国的。
We don't have Google. I mean, we use Google, but it's from America.We don't have Facebook. We do use Facebook, but it's from America. We don't have Amazon. I mean, we do have Amazon, but it's from America, etc.
德国没有自己的谷歌，虽然他们用谷歌，但是谷歌是美国的公司。没有自己的 Facebook， 虽然他也用 Facebook， 但 Facebook 还是美国的公司。亚马逊也是一样，他们用亚马逊，但是亚马逊还是美国的公司。
So Germany makes great cars, but now, of course, we have Gen 2.
德国呢，它还是能够造一些好的车，但是现在我们有前途了。
谢谢对前途的这个赞赏哈。那广告我就不多说了，谢谢教授的这个捧场。那第二个问题呢，我是对这个数据有一个问题，就是说您个人是一个非常知名的世界级的这种数据科学家，但是呢，咱们在成长的过程当中都有一些。阶段啊，我就特别好奇，就是什么样的原因让您对这个数据这么感兴趣？有没有一些特别的一个场合
？So yes, I've always been curious about data, and it was last year in an interview for Da Zhong Daily that the very good interviewer got a story out of me which I had almost forgotten.
其实我一直都对于数据非常的好奇。去年在我接受大众日报采访的时候呢，那个人他刚好提出了一个讲了一个故事，这个故事我都快忘记了。
And it was in primary school, where in order to you know learn about data, our teacher asked us to measure the temperature and to write it down for different hours of the day.
在小学的时候，为了培养我们对于数据的意识，老师呢就会让我们去把这个天气记录下来，而且呢按照什么具体的每个时间段来记录。
Now I should share with you that I never like to go to bed in the evening, but also never like to get up in the morning.
我要跟大家说的是，我晚上呢总是不愿意睡去，然后第二天早上呢又很难起来。
So apparently the same was true when I was in primary school.So what I did, I just made up the temperature at 7 a.m. instead of getting up and look at the thermometer.
小学的时候我也是早上的时候醒不来，所以呢七点钟让我去记录这个天气温度的数据，我就直接自己编造了一个数据。
And I proudly came to class with the measurements and you know, she said, I think you lied because you said it's warmer at 7 a.m. than 5 a.m. or than midnight or something. And that is not the case.Because the sun hasn't risen yet.
然后呢，我就把我这个记录下的加上编造的数据呢，就拿到了课堂上给老师看。老师就说，我觉得你这个数据你肯定上面是造假的，因为你说早上七点钟的时候温度要比其他时候要高，但是这是不可能的，因为那时候太阳还没有出来。
I think I was quite lucky that my primary school teacher called me out in making up data.
其实我觉得我是非常幸运的，因为那时候小学老师会无情地指出来我在数据上是造假的。
So that is probably how me being curious about data started. Then I did my undergraduate in physics and I worked at CERN in Geneva.
这大概就是我对于数据的好奇的缘起。接着呢，本科的时候我就读了物理学，接着呢，我又在日内瓦去读我的研究生。
That was in the mid-2080s.30 years ago, when the web was just being conceptualized. Tim Berners-Lee invented it at CERN in around 89 or 90.
那大概是30年前的事情，那时候呢，互联网刚刚出现，也正是在日内瓦这个地方，这个 Tim Berners 他发明了互联网。
And I had, of course, no idea. I just thought it's cool to be at CERN, that I was there when it happened.
我当时呢，其实也没有多大的概念，我只是觉得非常的幸运，在我在那个在日内瓦的时候，刚好呢互联网被发明了。
So CERN is the European Center for Particle Physics. The US equivalent is SLAC, the Stanford Linear Accelerator Center in Palo Alto.
当时在日内瓦的时候，我在的机构叫做 CERN， 它是欧洲的粒子物理学中心，在美国呢也有一个类似的机构叫做 SLAC。也就是斯坦福的线性加速中心。
So since I did my undergrad at CERN, I decided to apply for grad school at SLAC, and I did my PhD at Stanford, but not in physics, but in what is called neural networks or deep learning.
因为我是在日内瓦这个 CERN 欧洲粒子研究中心去读的我本科学位，我就想干脆我博士的时候就去 SLAC 读，但是呢在 SLAC 的时候我没有继续沿着物理学的道路发展，而是去选择了神经网络和深度学习。
So actually I was just totally lucky that the guy who invented neural nets, my PhD advisor, had just shown up at Stanford and that he took me on as his graduate student to build the first neural networks for time series prediction.
其实我非常幸运，就是当时在我读博士的时候呢，我的导师他研究的神经网络，他呢就接收了我作为他的学生，而且我们一道去做了第一个时间序列神经网络。
And then with a PhD from Stanford in neural nets, you can go anywhere. So I decided to do some consulting on Wall Street with Goldman Sachs.
既然你拿到了斯坦福的神经网络的博士学位，你无论想去哪里工作都没有问题，所以我就决定去华尔街，我就给高盛做了咨询。
And we built predictive models. We made predictions for instance, the stock market based on the traces that we could observe in the financial markets.
我们呢主要就是去为股市去做预测，我们建一些预测的模型，然后基于对于股市的一些观察来预测未来的表现。
And then Amazon started. And I like labs. I like experiments. I like to figure out things by testing hypotheses.
然后亚马逊就出现了，因为我本身非常的喜欢去做实验，我喜欢去提出一些假设，然后去验证这些假设。
Yeah, physics was kind of interesting, but it's actually quite difficult. Wall Street was kind of, you know, financially rewarding, but kind of boring.
学物理嘛，很有意思，但是很难。华尔街可能报酬不错，但是很无聊。
but doing experiments on people? Yes, that sounded the thing to do. And not just a few people in a lab. No, experiments on millions and millions of people, namely the customers who come to Amazon. That was my kind of thing as their chief scientist.
在人身上做实验是很有意思的一件事情，但是呢，不仅仅是在实验室里有几个人，只有几个人去做实验，而是给上百万的人去做实验。这也就是在亚马逊，我作为首席科学家做的，就是去在数百万的消费者身上做实验。
So what really has made Jeff Bezos, the CEO of Amazon, the richest man in the world?
那么到底是什么让亚马逊的贝索斯成为世界上最富有的人呢？
His interest in experimenting, in trying out new things, and learning from the data that come in.
我觉得也是归因于他对于实验、对于尝试新的东西、对于从数据中学习的兴趣。
And then I spent 3 years writing my book,Data for the People, in which I wrote many of my beliefs and many of the stories I've experienced with many of my friends having helped.
在后来我就花了3年的时间去写这本书《大数据和我们》。在书里面呢，我就讲了很多的故事，而且呢，我也写了我自己对于数据的一些想法和信仰。
And besides that,I'm working with a number of big companies on digital transformation. Not necessarily data companies to start with.
除此之外，我还和一些大公司在一块儿做数据转型，数字化转型。其实也不一定是数据公司。
For example, I did a workshop a couple of months ago in Bangkok, Thailand, for Siam Cement Group, a company that creates cement.
比如说在几天之前呢，我就在曼谷给一家水泥公司和去做一个培训。
And what I do with these companies is help them imagine the future of data.
其实我和这些公司做的呢，就是去帮助他们想象一下一个有数据的未来。
There will come a point in time where it is cheaper to analyze your DNA by you, you know,sitting on the toilet, then to flush the toilet.
未来总有一个时间点会出现这样一种场景，当你在洗手间坐在这个马桶上的时候，去分析你的 DNA, 这个成本要比冲也这个冲马桶的成本更低。
So I would tell them, you are in the business of putting things in people's homes where they sit down. So make the best of it.Create products from the data people create, whether they want it or not, and make it sure that it's useful for them.
所以我就说，你们要做的呢，就是想象一下，在这样一个未来，你要去利用人们所创造的数据，去为他们提供一些产品，一些对他们而言有用的产品。
Or another example, here we are in the mall. So clearly, there are questions: How do people move through the mall?Cameras can figure out that guy over there with the white t-shirt and the blue shorts who's curious about us now. The cameras can track him and find out where he's going next.
再举一个更加切身的例子，现在我们在商场里面，那商场里面就要考虑每个人到底要去哪里。比如说现在在外面看的这些人，那商场里面的摄像头就会知道他们接下来会去哪里。
Putting the wrong store.At a location in the mall is very expensive. It costs probably 100 million RMB to redo an expensive store. So having data about how people move through the mall and being able to put the right store at the right location is a good decision based on data that people create whether they want it or not.
在商场里面，如果说你开店，你选的这个地址是错的，那的代价会是非常昂贵的。如果说你要重新开店的话，可能成本就要高达上亿的人民币。所以说，你通过去追踪人们的数据，了解人们在商场里面到底是怎么活动的，从而在正确的地点开正确的商店，这就是数据能够帮助我们做决策的一个方面。
But the question for Siam Cement Group was, where should they place in retail that people order online and pick things up offline in the store? Where should they place the pickup station? Right at the entrance, which makes it easy for people, but loses the chance to sell something else, or maybe all the way in the back of the store, where, you know, maybe they sell something else, but people hate the experience and will never come back because they have to walk through all the store. That is an experimental question, which you can answer by collecting the data.
对于那家水泥店而言，因为他们会有线上的销售和线下提货，所以他们要决定，如果说决定把自己的线下的提货店放在商场里，是放在商场入口处呢，还是放在商场最里面的位置？如果是在入口处，那么人们提货很容易，但是因为入口处的位置有限，所以他们不可能就没有办法再搭售其他的产品。如果说你把这个提货的店放在商场背后，可能空间更大，你可以搭售其他东西，但是人们要从入口处一直要走到最里面，他们可能觉得这个体验很糟糕，下次就再也不来了。对于这家水泥店而言，他们需要通过实验，通过收集数据来做出正确的判断。
So the spectrum of companies I've had the honor to work with, sometimes with the CEO, sometimes with the management team, is pretty big. Let me give you a few examples.
我呢是有幸和许许多多的公司，要么是 CEO， 要么是他们的管理层一块合作。
I've worked with many telecommunication companies. Earlier this year, I worked with Tencent in Shenzhen. I have worked here in Chengdu actually with China Mobile. I've worked with Singtel in Singapore, Axiata in Kuala Lumpur, of course in Germany with Deutsche Telekom, New Zealand Telekom, and a number of companies, because telcos know a lot about people.
比如说我和很多的电信公司就合作过，在今年的年初的时候我还和腾讯有过合作，而在成都的时候实际上那时候是和中国移动有合作，新加坡的电信公司，在新西兰以及德国许许多多国家的电信公司，因为电信公司的话他们是需要收集人的数据的。
I've worked with many airlines, because last but not least,I do spend a lot of time on airplanes myself, and I have time to think about, you know, airline issues. I've, of course, as a German, worked with Lufthansa, German airline. I've worked United. I've worked here in Shanghai with China Eastern, with MU. I have actually done a workshop for all of the Star Alliance CEOs.
还有呢，我会和航空公司合作，因为我自己作为一个经常飞的人，所以会有时间去思考航空公司有哪些问题。比如说我和德国的汉莎航空、和美国的美联航、中国的东航都有过合作，而且我之前还和给整个天合联盟的所有公司的 CEO 做过一个培训。
How do people make their decisions? How do we decide that we are flying China Southern, I think, tomorrow, as opposed to Air China?So if you understand what options you present to people and how you present it to them, then you just simply run a better business. And what's called yield management in airlines of adjusting the prices so you fill all the seats so you get maximum revenues is one wonderful and important example of the application of big data.
比如说你要去了解人们到底是怎么做决策，他们为什么选择飞东航而不是飞国航，这些呢就是你可以帮助航空公司去做的一些优化。比如说你可以航空公司去可以知道到底给乘客怎样的选择，以及如何去呈现给他们的选择，可以提高航空公司的座位的这个座位的就是大家座位的填满率，另外呢可以让他们有更高的收入，这些呢就是大数据能够给航空公司带来的价值。
The third category of companies which are being revolutionized by data is of course retail.
第三类被大数据所颠覆的行业呢就是零售公司。
So last year I worked both with the CEO of H&M in Stockholm and the CEO of Uniqlo in Tokyo, Japan.
去年呢，我既和 H&M 的 CEO 合作过，而且呢，也和日本的这个优衣库的 CEO 合作过。
It was absolutely fascinating to see the different data cultures in the two companies, how open H&M was, and how difficult it was in that hierarchical Uniqlo or fast retailing where people tend to start as a salesman and then move up.
这两个公司的这个数据文化是截然不同的。H&M 是非常开放的，但是呢，优衣库他们的官僚体系就非常的严重，每个人必须要从最底层的销售做起。
Let's see, that store behind you over there, that they have too many XL, too many extra large. What can they do about it?
你再比如说，就是身后的这个商店，这个商店里面他们的衣服可能 XL 这个号的存货非常的多，那么怎么办呢？
Put a pretty girl there who, whenever a tall guy or girl comes by, say, oh, come in, come in, come in, and ignores all the small people, that would be discriminating.
如果说你就直接雇一个长得很漂亮的店员，每次看到长得高的男性或者女性，你就跟他说，进来看一下，那可能对于这个小个子人就是歧视了。
Doing a store-wide discount, 20% off, well, that would be giving away the store because only XL is overstocked.
或者说你就直接打折，打20%的折扣。但是呢，这样子对于这家商店而言，其实他们存货过多只有 XL 号，但是呢却要给所有的号折扣，对于商店而言是一个不利的，或者并不是一个好的决策。
So the key is that we shift the focus from the unit of analysis being the store to the unit of analysis being the customer. And suddenly we know.What size he is wearing. And if we know that he's a customer and we have his WeChat, then we can only send to extra large people the message of saying 20% off in our store. That is an example of how data radically changes the way, in this case, marketing in store in retail management is done.
那现在呢，你的关注的焦点不要放在这个店铺本身，而要放在消费者身上。比如说你知道有一些消费者他的号就是 XL 号，所以呢你就直接精准的给他们发送微信的短信，跟他说在我们店里 XL 号有20%的折扣。这个呢也是一个很好的大数据帮助你去管理零售店的例子。
谢谢教授给我们举了非常多的关于生意上的一些例子哈。其实我要告诉他一个秘密，其实在我们这个店里啊也安装了很多的这个 WiFi 探针，作为新零售的一个代表，其实我们也能够知道说这个商场周边的人流量，包括比如说哪些顾客在我们这个店里面停留的时间，包括他们的移动的动线，这其实我们都在收集，也在做这些数据分析，所以我不知道现场的那个朋友们有没有一些关于这个个人或者是生意上的一些问题可以随时问，有没有，现在有没有谁有什么问题？
But I have to warn you, Amazon was granted a patent in May last year that if you are using somebody's Wi-Fi, like maybe you're using here the Qian2 Wi-Fi in the lounge, that you can rewrite whatever they are seeing.
而且呢，跟大家说一下，就去年的时候，亚马逊拿到了一个专利。这个专利是说，如果说你用了某个地方的 WiFi， 比如说你用前途的 WiFi， 那你可以去重写其他人看到的东西。
So let's say you are here on their WiFi and looking for BMW, and the results you get back is Qian2, because that is what Amazon's patent is. If you're in the store.And using free Wi-Fi, hey, we can rewrite what you are seeing.
比如说你用了前途E的 Wi-Fi, 你本来是想搜车，你想搜宝马，但是呢，前途可以让呈现在你面前的就是前途跑车这样一个界面。这就是亚马逊的专利，就是说一旦你用了某人的 Wi-Fi, 那这个人呢就能决定你看到什么。
And I also have a little secret. The hotel I stayed in Shanghai, yeah, was a Hyatt.And I actually did consulting for Hyatt. So when you walk in, if you ever have used the free Wi-Fi in any of the Hyatts, or if you've downloaded the app called World of Hyatt, then as you're approaching that check-in counter, already your picture comes up and they say, and you get greeted with, hello, Dr. Weigand. And you think, wow, amazing. Customer service is based on data.
像凯悦那个韦森教授之前也给凯悦做过咨询，现在凯悦有这样一项服务，如果说你用凯悦的 WiFi 或者是你下载凯悦的 APP 的话，一旦你走进它的这个前台，就会出现你的照片，而且照片上会说欢迎。
And now I have another little secret for you. It's a small data example. So.I think maybe it's the smallest data example I know. I've heard that in many hotels here, when you use your RFID card, when you use your room card, that the signal that the door was opened, not necessarily that it was your card, just the signal that the door was opened, gets centrally collected by the hotel.
我还想和大家分享一个秘密，可能是一个小数据的秘密，是我知道的最小的数据级的秘密。也就是说，如果你在酒店里，你用你的房卡去刷开房间的门，那房间门开了这样一个信号呢，会被酒店所收集。
Now, if you think about it, yes, there's Face Plus Plus and SenseTime, these face recognition companies here in China. But just knowing that some door opened.6, 8, 10, 12 times at night, it is not a big data problem to maybe have somebody look into what's going on there.
这种例子里面就是你不需要有一个面部识别，哪怕酒店只要知道某一个房门在半夜的时候开了几次，六次、八次、十次、十二次，那这样子本身呢就是一个数据所带来的酒店在窥视你行为的一个例子。
So it's an example where asking a good question and knowing what to collect can go a very long way.
所以呢，当你知道你要问什么正确的，问出正确的问题，而且知道你可以收集怎样的数据，那在很大程度上就能够帮助你去做决策。
It of course also is a good example of.That the same information that can be used to catch drug dealers, criminals, can also be used to catch people who, you know, for some other reason, the government might not like.
而且那一套用来去追踪罪犯也好，追踪毒贩子的这套技术是也是可以为政府所用，去用来追踪其他的一些目标的。
But all I want to say is that we really.By becoming more data literate, by becoming more digital literate, understanding what is possible now, what is possible as we cross the street with the cameras here, what can be extracted and knowing that ultimately there's no place to hide and knowing that we as societies need to actually think about what do we want to do about it.
所以呢，还是一个数据素养，回到这个数据素养的问题。当你知道你是没有办法去无处可藏的时候，那你就要知道，作为一个社会，我们到底应当怎么做。
好，谢谢哈。那个现场有什么人要提问吗？可以举手吗？啊，首先谢谢威森先生给大家带来的分享。其实你小的时候去用天气数据作假的事情我自己也做过，所以说这个可能有共同语言。那么我想问的是，你会认为区块链的这样一个趋势跟技术以后应用在比如说类似于像前途驿站这样的比如说兼具了很强社交功能的连锁销售店里面的应用场景是什么样的？
Great question. SoBlockchain, at its essence, means that you cannot change data. It's an expensive technology in terms of, you know, computation which is needed, but it means that things cannot get changed.
刚刚问的这个问题呢，非常的好。 它区块链的关键就在于数据是无法篡改的。
I think the effect on companies, on how people work together, will be huge. On how organizations work, the effect of blockchain, I think, is very big.
我认为区块链会对于公司，会对于大家工作的方式会产生重要的影响。
My book starts with the question, what if we lived in a world where everything was recorded? And when I say recorded, I don't just mean recorded, I mean recorded and stored. And blockchain pushes access that to the next level, where everything was recorded and stored and cannot be changed.
想象一下，我们所身处的世界，一切都会被记录下来，一切记录的又会被保存，而区块链将这个带得更进一步，一切被保存的东西都是不能被篡改的。
I'm selling my house in Shanghai right now, so I got my down payment from them and still the maiden month is going to come. Think just how these offices which deal with real estate, where a guy with a German passport who now has an American passport, whose mortgage is on his Chinese name, that is a nightmare for everybody, including myself.
我现在呢是打算把我在上海的房子给卖掉，因为在买房的时候呢，我用的房贷是用我中文名字韦斯安，但是呢，我现在自己一个是有德国的护照，现在又有美国的护照。那对于房地产中介而言，要处理这样一个情况，其实不管是对中介还是对我本人而言，都是一个非常可怕的事情。
But what space do we want to give people? So if somebody as a child steals something in a shop, should this be able to be forgiven, to be forgotten?I think we all have done stupid things in life. How, as society, do we react to that?
但是想象一下，如果说区块链把一些东西都记录下来，我们是否在另外一方面也应当给人一些空间呢？比如说一个小孩他在店里偷了东西，这件事情是否应当被遗忘，应当被原谅？因为每个人都会做一些傻事，那作为整个社会，我们应当去怎么面对这样的情况？
My father for many years was in prison in East Germany, most of the 1950s. Why? Because he shared a room with somebody just for two nights until the person disappeared.And the Soviet occupation forces in East Germany thought that the other person was an American spy. And they found my father's name in his notebook after he got captured. That data was enough for them to put my dad into prison at the beginning in solitary confinement, no contact with the world.
我的父亲在二世纪五十年代很长一段时间一直都被关在监狱里，为什么呢？就是因为他当时是和一个人，他们俩一块住了两晚，然后这个人就消失了。那时候东德被苏联军队所占领，苏联军队呢就觉得这个人是个美国的间谍，他们把这个人抓住之后，在他的笔记本上就发现了我父亲的名字。对他们来说，这一点就已经足够认为我父亲是有问题的，所以呢，他们就把我的父亲关到了监狱里，与世隔绝。
So I pushed for the point before where I said AI, fact of 10 every year. We have no idea what that will be in 6 years from now, where we have a million times more computing in AI than compared to now.
我之前也说过，人工智能的计算能力呢是每一年就会翻十倍，所以很难想象16年之后，当这个计算能力翻上百万倍之后会发生什么。
I think just as important is that data will always be there, will never be able to be changed.
但是呢，有一点很重要，就是数据能够始终在那里，不会被篡改。
I think very highly of Tencent. Tencent invited me in April this year to do a workshop in Shenzhen, a workshop entitled What Can We Learn from Facebook?
其实我个人是非常欣赏腾讯的，腾讯在今年四月份的时候也邀请我去深圳跟他们一块儿做一个研讨会，这个研讨会的主题呢就是腾讯能够从 Facebook 上学到什么。
And of course, I'm the one who learns most in such a workshop. And what I learned was the design of WeChat in a country where, you know, the leaders of WeChat don't want to constantly get calls from Beijing about data about people. The design of WeChat was that, well, as you all know, once you downloaded a message, it's gone from the server.
其实我个人从这个研讨会上获益最多，因为我了解微信的一个设计方式，因为微信它不希望能够总是就是被政府所询问有关于某些数据的东西，所以呢一旦你下载了某条信息，那这条信息会自动的从腾讯的这个服务器上被删除。
So some of the problems that Facebook has, and I personally think that these are very serious problems where Mark Zuckerberg has betrayed 1 billion people in bynot remembering things which he clearly should have remembered, or not quite remember things correctly which he surely must have remembered. So some of these problems simply didn't exist at WeChat by design, because from the very beginning it was set up so those things cannot happen.
但是 Facebook 在这一点上做得不好，因为 Zuckerberg 他实际上是在这个方面他背叛了使用 Facebook 的数十亿的用户，有一些东西他应该是记得，但是他却并没有记得，而这些问题呢都是微信他能够避免的，因为微信从一开始设计中就没有设计这个功能。
I'm to close with two stories. One story I told you, I like experiments. And I think the most interesting experimentwe are having right now in this world is to have 1 billion people using WeChat with a certain set of assumptions baked in, well separated through the great firewall of China from another 1 billion people using Facebook with a very different set of assumptions baked in.
最后呢，我还想和大家分享两个故事，因为我非常喜欢实验，我觉得现在最有意思的一个实验就是在防火墙的一侧是中国的10亿人，他们用微信，而在防火墙的另一侧呢，又是世界其他国家的10亿人，他们用 Facebook， 而这用微信的人和用 Facebook 人假设是完全不一样的。
And I want to close with one other story about somebody who had me at his data coach. And that was on November 10, 2 years ago. And it was in Moscow.
最后呢，还想和大家分享的一个数据，也是一个有关于他雇佣了我做他数据教练的人的故事。这是在2年前11月10号在莫斯科发生的。
Vladimir Putin paid full rate to learn from me about data and AI.
普京，他呢就付钱让我去教他数据和人工智能。
That was not the surprising thing.What was surprising to me that that very morning before meeting him, I got the news that Trump got elected.
当然这个呢其实并不是很令人吃惊的事情，更令人吃惊的就是就在我要和他见面的那天早上，我突然看到消息特朗普当选。
And I of course had no idea that Putin had any idea about anything there, butIn that meeting, the phone of one of the guys, the former economics minister, rang. And the guy walked out of the meeting and took the call.
当然呢，当时我不知道普京和这个事情到底有什么样的联系，但是就在我们见面的时候，突然他的经济部长电话响了，于是呢，他就出去接了这个电话。
It was so strange to me that he just took a call that when he came back,I sort of said, you know, what happened? And he said, we had an attack.
然后呢，他当他走回房间的时候，我就问他发生了什么事，他说我们被人攻击了。
Attack. Yeah, computer attack. Oh, computer attack. And I thought I'm smart. Computer attacks come from Russia, or they come from China. I'm in Russia, so I blurted out, "Oh, that must have come from China."
然后呢，他就说我们是遭到一个计算机的攻击。我想计算机攻击嘛，要么是来自俄罗斯，要么来自中国。现在我在俄罗斯，那我就说肯定是来自中国的攻击。
And the guy took a deep breath and looked at me and said, "What about America?" And I thought, "Oh man, you know that is the propaganda we all fall for."
然后这个人就说，为什么不想想是美国的攻击呢？然后就想，大概所有人都会受到这样的宣传。
谢谢那个教授给我们分享这么多哈，从他的一个演讲，包括这个互动问答，然后现在时间也不早了，我把这个主持权交给高博，好吗？
好，那我们还有没有一些问题？我觉得大家如果想提问的话，如果没有的话呢，对，没有的话，我们结束之后可以自由交流。然后在左侧车的后面那张桌子上呢，也放了教授的书《大数据和我们》，如果有朋友买的话，也可以请教授帮您签名。然后下一期的秩序沙龙邀请到了是超马越野跑，就是超级马拉松越野跑的爱好者，他其实在国际上也非常有名，叫关雅迪，他刚刚完成了在比利牛斯山脉900公里的越野跑，刚刚回到中国，然后呢也会邀请他来到现场，下周对，然后具体的这个活动详情和报名可以关注前途易的公众号，在我们的一些咖啡桌还有一些其他的休闲桌上呢都放有那个二维码的关注的牌子，大家可以扫二维码关注我们的公众号。再次感谢大家今天一直坐在这里来听，然后接下来就是自由交流的时间和自由参观的时间，谢谢。
Okay, then all I can do is thank you for having me in Chengdu. 谢谢你 and good night.
再次感谢大家。